This is Pat Odie-Marie. I'm subbing for Al Cresta today. And I want you to know, by providing quality programming faithful to the teachings of the Catholic Church, EWTN Television is TV that viewers can trust. Whether it's films, documentaries, news coverage, lively discussion shows, or kids' programs, we highlight the truth that is the eternal word. For a complete schedule of the EWTN television programs, visit EWTN.com and click TV. So as you know, I am Pat Odie-Murray. I am subbing for Al Cresta today. He is working on the Ave Maria Radio Spring Membership Drive. So again, we just ask that you continue to support your local EWTN Catholic radio station. So we're excited. I'm always excited. I got to talk to this person last time I was subbing for Al. It is Michael J. New. He's the assistant professor of practice at the Bush School of Business at the Catholic University of America, a senior associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute, and a Paige Comstock Cunningham Fellow at Americans United for Life. Welcome, Michael.
Ah, thanks for having me. Much appreciated.
Well, yeah, I've been reading about all of these things going on, especially the Arizona, that their law on this, it's an old law, 1864, that now seems to be coming into play, right? Can you explain this for the audience?
Sure. I mean, once Roe v. Wade was reversed in summer of 2022, set off a law of legal activity. Many states had laws that predated Roe v. Wade that limited abortion in either some or all circumstances, and Arizona was one of those states. And it was kind of a unique law because it was actually passed before Arizona became a state. That said, litigation worked its way through the court this past week. The Arizona Supreme Court upheld the 1864 law. It does provide legal protection for all preborn children. It does contain an exception for life of the mother. That said, it will not go into effect right away. There's kind of a 14-day grace period.
Okay.
I think there will be additional legal appeals. But essentially, some of the laws that we had in place before Dobbs, before Roe, I should say, were subject to legal challenges.
Right.
That was the case of this Arizona law. But thankfully, it seems like we have a good ruling from the Arizona Supreme Court.
Well, Michael, because in 2022... the legislature, didn't they pass a bill in Arizona that banned abortion after 15 weeks? So what happens to that law? Does that just go away?
Well, I think they ruled the two laws really not in direct conflict. I mean, that was one issue I think the court had to deal with. Does the 15-week ban or does the 15-week protection, I should say, kind of supersede or nullify the 1864 law? And the Supreme Court said both can simultaneously exist. One doesn't really supersede the other. The 1864 law, is in fact valid and will likely go into effect in about 14 days.
Okay. Don't they contradict each other, though? Am I not understanding something?
I don't necessarily think so. I think that I'm not an expert about how the 15-week law was drafted.
Right.
But I don't think it explicitly legalized abortion for 15 weeks. It just said that abortions couldn't be performed after 15 weeks gestation. So it didn't explicitly legalize abortion in any circumstances. Mm-hmm. It just kind of added another layer saying that, preborn children are protected once they hit the gestation mark of 15 weeks.
Okay. Well, Arizona's looking at a referendum this fall, it would propose to create a fundamental right to abortion for up to 24 weeks in the state. So my question is, can the legislature pass a bill that would kind of cut the legs out from under this referendum?
That's a very good question. My understanding is this referendum is constitutional. And generally speaking, a statute can't undermine or nullify a constitutional amendment. So the legislature is a little bit weak into what it can do. The legislature could try to pass its own constitutional amendment, but obviously passing a constitutional amendment is a much higher threshold, much more difficult than just passing a statute. So I think the legislature's options are kind of limited here. I think this will go on the ballot. It could, again, really make abortion policy in Arizona much more permissive. I do think this certainly is worth the attention of pro-lifers both in Arizona and around the country.
Wow. Well, one of the things that I read was that, you know, maybe the legislature could pass, you know, like a bill that would allow for like the exceptions of, you know, rape and incest, those kinds of things. And then they thought, well, if they would pass that with those exceptions, and then that would force the governor to veto it, and then she would look like an extremist. Is this kind of a game thing that's going on here?
Well, essentially, I mean, my understanding with the Arizona law is that the only exception provides for is life of the mother.
Okay.
One thing we know, just what the polling tells us, is that, you know, when you add exemptions for rape
and incest, yeah,
pro-life laws tend to poll a bit better. So, I mean, that's an interesting strategy. You know, I think there will be certainly some pushback. You know, there are certainly pro-life people who may make good arguments that unborn children deserve protection in all cases. You know, nobody really has any control over the circumstances surrounding their conception. It's an interesting political game. Will they succeed in doing that? I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah. Now, Florida's dealing with some stuff, too, because they're looking at a constitutional amendment also. Are you familiar with their because they're that 6-week heartbeat protection, that's currently blocked, is my understanding. So I'm not real sure. I think they're still at that 15-week abortion ban. Am I correct?
Well, actually, we got good news from the Florida courts that
just
issued a decision upholding the 15-week ban. The heartbeat bill that Governor DeSantis signed will take effect as of early May, I think May 1st.
Okay.
And it was actually a good decision for a variety of reasons. One problem pro-lifers have had in Florida is that back in 1980, a privacy clause was inserted into the state constitution.
Okay.
Purpose of this privacy clause was basically to limit government surveillance.
It
didn't have anything to do with abortion.
Right.
But judges have used this privacy clause to strike down all kinds of pro-life laws, parental involvement laws, other pro-life laws. This ruling said that the privacy clause does not pertain to abortion. So that was actually a nice win. Not only did we get the 15-week protection upheld, the 6-week protection upheld, it also said that the privacy clause does not pertain to abortion. So it was a good victory. We know in Florida, you know, there's over 84,000 abortions a year. 50,000 take place after 6 weeks gestation. So we could see thousands of preborn children being protected because of these good judicial decisions that the court rendered.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that came up, some pro-life groups are not happy that the constitutional amendment that the Supreme Court is allowing to go ahead in Florida. Are you familiar with that amendment and what some of the problems are with it?
Right. There was some concern. It was subject to litigation.
Right.
Some people thought it was too broad,
yeah,
or was just fundamentally misleading. And some judges on the Supreme Court did agree. But by a 4-3 margin, they did, you know, issue a ruling that said this amendment, which again would place legal abortion in the Florida state constitution, will be on the ballot in November. So there were some arguments that pro-lifers made about it was vague, it covered too many topics.
Yeah.
But the courts, or at least the majority of judges on the court, did not find those arguments to be persuasive. One thing I would want to just communicate to your listeners is that Florida is unique, that to amend the Constitution at the ballot box, you need 60%.
Okay.
Not a majority, 60%. So it's a pretty high threshold for our opponents to reach.
Right.
In states where pro-lifers have, you know, pushed against, you know, these pro-abortion ballot propositions, Michigan, Ohio, Kansas, we've kept our opponents underneath 60. So obviously we're working out for us. You know, a lot of money
sure
will be spent. It's going to require a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. But this is winnable. I
right
think we can stop, you know, this pro-abortion ballot proposition from getting 60% of the vote,
yeah,
on Election Day.
Yeah, yeah. And especially I think they just have to be very clear because it sounds like, you know, when they put that clause in, that, you know, a health care provider can say for any reason the health not being defined includes everything. So the minute you say for the health of the mother, an abortion could occur, it makes it sound like that's right up until birth. And that's, you know, and again, what do you mean by health? So it really turns into a gray area, that's for sure. And obviously the bishops of Florida are moving to, you know, say no to that amendment. I want to get your take too, Michael, on former President Trump the last couple of days. He's been, you know, saying it's up to states. Today, you know, they just handed me this afternoon right before we were getting ready to go that he indicated he wasn't happy with the Arizona Supreme Court as their decision. And earlier he said that Florida 6-week abortion ban was a terrible thing, a terrible mistake. What's going on?
Well, I think to a certain extent, you know, President Trump's relationship with the pro-life movement has always been transactional. You know, I think that when he was running for president, he knew he needed some pro-life votes. He agreed to do some things for us. He did agree to appoint pro-life people to executive branch offices. He did, you know, say he would appoint conservative constitutionalist judges, which he did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, pro-lifers were willing to support him. The politics of abortion, you know, have changed a bit since Roe's overturned. And it's disappointing that he's not really showing, you know, leadership on this issue. I think that most pro-lifers, myself included, does think the federal government has a role to play in protecting preborn children. Mm-hmm. You know, President Bush signed the partial birth abortion ban. President Bush also signed the Born Alive Infant Protection Act. So his backpedaling from a federal rule is certainly disappointing. But one thing, again, I'd want to communicate to your listeners is that in 2024, we have an election coming up. Two people running for president, mm-hmm. you know, one will be elected, either
right.
Joe Biden or Donald Trump. Donald Trump will certainly give us better judicial nominees than Joe Biden will.
Mm-hmm.
He will likely appoint pro-life people to executive branch agencies. He will likely appoint pro-life people to the FDA. That's important.
Yeah.
A pro-life FDA appointee could put some protections and limits on chemical abortions. So it's disappointing. I think pro-lifers have our work cut out for us, just trying to win local elections, trying to win some of these state-level ballot propositions. You know, I wish President Trump were showing more leadership, but he is still vastly better on this issue than Joe Biden is.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt there. I think my disappointment is, I understand if he speaks out on federal things, and I was disappointed when he said he wouldn't sign a national abortion ban if he's reelected. But, I get, but we're even at the states, I'm kind of disappointed when he weighs in on state issues. You know, that's when I'm like, okay, you don't have to say anything about Arizona and Florida, you know? Well, Michael, thank you so much for some insights into these laws. We'll keep our eyes peeled as all of this stuff goes forward.
Great. Stay in touch.
Uh-huh. Thanks, and we'll come back on the other side. More Cresta ahead.